right, hi. So welcome to Season 2, Episode 7 of Asteroids in Exile. My name is Niv.
And I'm Martin.
And today we've got a pretty quick episode, so we're going to go through things pretty quick, pretty fast. I've repeated that already. So let's hope you can keep up, because I've clearly had too much of caffeine.
I had no caffeine today. Didn't have a single drip of cola, only water for me today.
How do you live? I don't understand.
I don't know.
You know, go on.
I have to podcast from my bedroom because I lost my man cave.
The man cave is gone. Yeah. Martin's getting ready for a new addition to the family. So, the man cave has had to give way. So yeah, we all have to eventually grow up. Apparently is what they tell us.
Yeah. And if you're refusing to grow up, then life grows up for you. Or grows you up.
And on that ultra realistic note, I guess let's dive into all the crazy fantasy and science fiction we need to talk about today.
Yeah. Let's escape.
Let's just do it. So we're going to start off with TV today. There's a couple of key things. The first one on the list here, which Martin wrote down, yeah, got me. I didn't hear about this one. So do you want to take us through what's happening with the Wachowskis?
The porn provider X-Hamster approached the Wachowski brothers to continue Sense 8 on their platform.
Really?
Which I think is amazing. It's like Pornhub is doing all those great things. Well, I mean, besides from porn, like sexual education and stuff, and they already put money into hosting things, and now TV is being taken over.
Well, there you go.
By the industry.
It's all about content, right? I mean, everyone wants to get into the original content game, and clearly the porn providers are not going to be left behind. So first of all, it's the Wachowski siblings, right? Because they're sisters now.
Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry.
Just a correction on that one. But otherwise, that's an interesting one. I know that, I mean, I just finished Sense8 season 2 maybe a week or two ago.
Yeah.
It was a long and arduous process. The ending was, I mean, it was okay, but it just took forever to get there. They are going to have a movie. So Netflix has committed, I believe, to having a movie to close off the story. I can see why Pornhub would be interested in it. Oh, sorry, X-Hamster. Just because there is a lot of just random sex scenes in that show. And they're being chased by an organization that's trying to kill them, but they still find time to get down and dirty. So
yeah, well, you have to keep the species going on.
You know, what's the point of living, I guess? You know, if you're not
keeping your man cave.
That's an interesting one. So I'm assuming, I don't know how the story ends with the Wachowskis and X-Hamster, but I'm assuming they said no and Netflix is still going to do the movie.
I didn't catch up on the news. I just thought it would be interesting because Sense8 haunted us for the last 3 or 4 episodes. So I thought I'd put it in there because it's such a great piece of news.
It's randomly. We need to just get, like the show itself, Sense8 tends to just kind of like hang around. When is this going to end? So, I mean, I enjoyed it. Again, it's a good looking show. It's put together. The production values and the quality of the show is really awesome. It's just that the story tends to drag on. Anyway.
Like at the end of season 2, the story finally is at a place where I think they can get proactive. And things could change. And then, you're cancelled. Thank you.
Well, yeah. And I think just in terms of closing it all off with a 2-hour movie, it gives them enough time to finish off the story, but not enough time to just do random stuff that draws it out. So,
yeah.
Cool. So we'll see what happens. We'll see what else Pornhub and X-Hamster get into the game of, plus whatever other porn providers there are out there. I'm sure there's a whole litany of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, more to come on that one. Stay watching, everyone. All right, and then Rick and Morty. So you've been watching season 3?
Yeah, I started season 3. I thought it would be also a good show for you to watch because I really enjoyed season 3. This show is firing on all cylinders with the episodes that have been released so far, which are 6 or 7 at the moment. I don't see how they can top themselves in a season 4.
Really?
Yeah, it's an amazing show. You can watch it as a entertaining endeavor, and then you can start think about all the things that were said and done, and all the themes that they are talking about, and it's getting really, really complex.
I've heard it is quite good in the sense of like it does have that it's funny and stupid, but still has quite a lot of social commentary.
Yeah.
Like there's a lot in there to sort of unpack.
Yeah. And especially, it started to tell, or at least for me, it started to tell the viewer he, she should stop watching the show and go out and do something with their lives.
Oh, really?
Or be,
that's a good message.
Be a better person. Yeah. I mean, it's weird. Perhaps only I see it that way. But yeah. The Pickle Rick episode, the meme factory that is the Pickle Rick episode somehow can get summarized with saying stop watching the show.
Stop watching. Go out. Yeah. Live life.
Take charge of your life so you don't become like Rick and Morty.
I think recently everyone around me has been talking about Rick and Morty. So it's something I should definitely get into, yeah. I think. So I've not actually watched any of it. So
really?
I guess like I got 3 seasons to catch up on.
Yeah, but it's only 13 episodes per season, so it's rather quick.
Okay.
The episodes are 20 minutes.
20 and they're minutes 20 minute episodes. Okay.
It's not like you have anything else to watch. Like,
I mean, no. I mean, I am starved for content right now.
The Game of Thrones has ended. So.
Yeah. Well, true. Again, what is life without Game of Thrones? I got to wait a whole 2 years. So, yeah, no, for sure, I'll check out Rick and Morty. It'll definitely be put on the list. I'm currently going to... I've restarted Clone Wars because I realized I never actually finished it. And a friend of mine was talking about how I need to get back into it and just finish the, I think, 6 or 7 seasons.
The
original
seasons,
Clone
yeah.
Wars. 6 seasons.
No, 5 seasons. 1 through 4 and 5 is the missing season.
Oh.
It was only available on DVD, I think.
Oh, right. Is it on Netflix?
It got taken down in Europe in January this year.
Oh, right. Actually, yeah, we're going to lose it in October.
So
Clone Wars is going away, I'm pretty sure. So that was part of my point, was to see if I could finish it on Netflix before it went away. That's not going to happen. October's already here.
Now so. I have a Christmas present for you.
Oh, no. Yes, everything you've ever wanted. In DVD form. Yeah, so that's cool. But I also just finished BoJack Horseman season 4, I believe was the latest season. 4. If you don't watch that show, I mean, very similar to the comments we made about around Rick and Morty, it's just, I thought it was like Oscar worthy. Like, I know Netflix TV shows don't win Oscars, but I would award it an Academy Award. I thought it was just fantastic. Really smart show.
That's the reaction I got from my filter bubble. Everybody's raving about that show.
Yeah.
Guess I should get so into the game.
Yeah, that's the two different worlds we live in. I'm like surrounded by Rick and Morty. You're surrounded by BoJack Horseman. Yeah, no, it's good. I mean, it's hard to describe. And when I try to describe it to people, it kind of puts people off a little bit when you talk about like the premise of the show. But once you start watching it, it is fantastic. So definitely, if you're not BoJack Horseman watcher, watch that. And I'll watch Rick and Morty in return. So moving on from, I guess, Netflix, have you watched The Orville?
Yeah, I've watched the pilot episode, and I mean, it's not that good.
Oh, really? Because I've heard a few people talk about it. Like, I've heard it mentioned in company, but I didn't actually catch on to what the key point was, like, i.e., is it good or bad? So you weren't impressed?
I'm impressed with the production value and the ideas behind it, because it feels like a classic Trek. Feels like Shatner Trek.
Right.
But Star Trek, the classic series, Shatner Trek.
Shatner Trek.
Shatner Trek.
No, I was going with it. I was like, that's a good way to hashtag Shatner Trek.
but, you know, out of respect, they don't go the full MacFarlane route with the jokes. And that's kind of holding the whole thing back as well.
Oh, so like it's not enough Seth MacFarlane,
yeah,
is what you're saying.
there could be more, I think.
Right. So Seth MacFarlane, he's the guy that did like Family Guy,
yeah,
and
American Dad. A Million Ways to Die in the West.
A Million Ways to Die in the West, at least. I knew it was something to do with the West. Yeah, I didn't like A Million Ways to Die in the West. I thought it was a bit stupid, but I mean, in general, he's pretty funny. And you're saying that they didn't really double down on his style of humor in this one?
No, absolutely not. There are still enough dick and fart jokes in there.
Mm-hmm.
And
Which is effectively the summary of his style.
Yeah. But, you know, there's enough respect, and it feels like a more believable Star Trek universe, because people are still being people in there. We haven't, this Star Trek universe hasn't quite reached the level of, you know, the Next Generation thing, where they say we're more in control of ourselves and we try to be better people.
Right.
This show could be at the set shortly before the point where humanity reaches that level of civilization.
Like enlightenment.
Enlightenment, or, yeah.
So is it trying to be like a serious show then? Or is it still like just trying to be a comedy? Or is that the point? It doesn't know what it's trying to be.
I think that's the problem. It's not fun enough to be called a comedy. It's not serious enough to be called a Star Trek show, I think. Or a serious sci-fi drama, for that matter. But then Star Trek Discovery starts tomorrow, so you'll get a pretty good benchmark of modern Trek.
Yeah, and that's supposed to be very similar in that vein that you were talking about as well. So what I heard is it's not just talking about humans and the Federation fighting aliens, but there's also infighting within Earth's factions and things like that. So it's supposed to be quite, like you said, more realistic, updated version of Star Trek, and just before we reach fuller enlightenment as a civilization. So I'm interested to see how that goes. And it's also, I mean, just in terms of the cast and the captain and the crew of the ship all being kind of like, it's a more diverse bunch. It'll be interesting to see how they make that work as well.
It's sad that Brian Fuller left the show because... I mean, I think somebody said they're still following his notes.
So he was the showrunner?
He was the showrunner, and then he left for American Gods, or was let go for American Gods, and that guy seriously needs a break, because it seems like he can't finish anything he starts.
Yeah. I finished American Gods as well, so that was pretty good. It was interesting.
It's on my list. I didn't like the book.
Yeah, I didn't like the book either.
You know, I've been fed up with Neil Gaiman because it's like you can't pass a corner on the internet without Neil Gaiman popping up from somewhere.
He's super prolific. Yeah. So we kind of skipped multiple topics there, but American Gods being a Neil Gaiman book, which is made into a TV show, which was showrun by Brian Fuller, who left Star Trek Discovery. Is that how a track back went?
Perfect submission.
Cool. Yeah, so just to finish off on Star Trek Discovery, I'm excited. I want to see how it goes. Here it's on CBS All Access, which I don't have, and it's not compelling enough for me to pay for another streaming channel just to watch Star Trek. So I'm just going to wait. So I will have to, because you're going to get it on Netflix, I believe.
Yeah, we get it on Netflix. I got the alarm today that it's up tomorrow. I thought it would be on Friday and not on Monday.
Nice. Because I'm going to Amsterdam this week, so I will be able to watch it when I get to Europe. Yes.
Amazing.
So that will be good. And then, I'm looking forward to it. I mean, I like Star Trek. I'm not a super Trekkie fan or anything, but I'm very interested to see how they reinterpret Star Trek based on current events and where humanity gets to. It almost feels like from a Star Trek commentary point of view, we've regressed.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Because they said, you know what? It's not realistic for us to have reached enlightenment by the next 200-300 years. And then, you know, on just on American Gods, so you haven't seen that yet. I enjoyed it.
Okay.
I enjoyed it. It was, again, a very, very interesting show, very well put together, I thought. The production quality was great. Like, it looked great. The whole thing plays like it's in a dream. And I thought, going back to Neil Gaiman's kind of style and sort of his, a lot of the things that, the themes that he has within his stories are about stories and dream and wake and, you know, the whole Sandman, what's reality, what's dream. The whole show runs like that, which is really cool because it's all, I guess, real, but it's also the way it looks on screen, it's very dreamlike. And I thought that was really cool.
I just saw the scene where Ian McShane reveals his role. In the Pantheon.
But that's the end, I know. That's literally like the last minute of this last episode.
Yeah, and I thought it's, like you said, it's put together in such a way that it could be seen as an illusion or just the imagination of one of the characters
that
this guy becomes.
A good, That's a good point. Well, is it actually what happened, or is it then just a dream? Is it real life?
Or is it fantasy? Freddy is all sitting in his grave right now.
I know. My voice is nowhere near.
No.
It's clearly. So American Gods was cool. So yeah, check it out and let us know what you think. And so that covers off the Orville on our list of topics. And the next one that I put on there was the DC. They're putting together their Teen Titans cast, and they've just cast Brenton Thwaites as Nightwing. This is a podcast, so people can't see Martin's face, but he's not impressed.
Yeah, I mean, he got, as I always say, he got the part because the casting director or the creative talent involved in the show saw something in him, and I just don't see it.
You don't see it? Have you seen anything he's in? Have you seen the last, because he was in the last Pirates movie, the last Pirates of the Caribbean?
I must admit, I haven't seen any of his work. I just know him from the photos that got put into the various articles declaring his casting. I don't know. Perhaps when I see him in the role, he's going to be a revelation. I'm going to regret ever doubting his ability to portray Nightwing. Who knows?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not convinced. He's an Australian, so I've got I've got some like Australian pride
soft spot
a little bit there, but at the same time, it's kind of like, yeah, you got to see him in the role. I don't know how he's going to do it. I haven't seen Pirates, but I saw him in The Giver, I think.
Oh,
which
yeah,
was like a Jeff Bridges movie as well. Jeff Bridges had a smaller role to play there. It was a very different kind of movie. I don't know how he's going to do with like the action, because Nightwing's a very acrobatic character. I mean, he's literally an acrobat from the circus, right? So it'll be cool to see how they put that together. I don't know whether the show is gonna have as much when it comes to like the stunts and the action scenes, like him doing, I don't know, backflips, and he's a trapeze artist, right? So I'm expecting a lot of action and a lot of flipping around. So we'll see how they do that.
On a TV budget as well.
Sorry?
On a TV budget as well. Because it's not like in Arrow where you have one good guy, one bad guy. You have the Teen Titans. You have to outfit the Teen Titans.
Well, they're going to have Starfire in this thing, right?
Yes, she has been cast as well, I think. But I don't know the actress' name. I just remembered. That's good preparation, kids.
Here's one we prepared earlier. Yeah, but I mean, just talking about the So I got a message. I'm getting distracted now. Just talking about the TV budget. With Starfire in there, she's a super special effects heavy character.
Yeah.
So on a TV budget, like you said, Iron Fist, when we get to the Defenders at the end of the session, only lights up a few times, right? Starfire is like pretty much constantly lit up with her power set whenever there's like any sort of fight. So it'll be interesting to see how they do that. And we also, I mean, did you watch the Inhumans?
No. Is that available to the public? Is that available to the public?
It was on IMAX and it was on TV, I'm pretty sure. Okay. I didn't watch any of it. It just looked terrible.
The trailers already looked... And all the interviews that came out with the director and stuff, everybody said, like, make it as cheap as possible and as fast as possible.
And it literally looks like that's exactly what they
did. What they did, yeah.
Yeah, so...
In one of the it's a spoiler. I won't spoil the show for anybody who's setting any giving any hopes.
What's that? The Inhumans show.
Yeah, the Inhumans show, because they did they found a way to get rid of the expensive special effects for Medusa.
Yeah, I mean, I saw that it looks really cheap.
Yeah,
it looks like it's almost like a film school kind of production.
Yeah. Anna Diop was being cast as Starfire.
Oh, right.
I forwarded you the link.
That's right. Anna Diop. So I don't think I've seen her in anything. So 24 Legacy, but I don't believe I watched that. I stopped 24 after like the first 5 seasons of it. Jack Bauer eventually needed to have like a toilet break. Again, with this whole show, I think all of the Titans cast, we need to see them in costume and see how they're going to do this. Yeah. Acting ability aside, I think from a production point of view, I really want this to work. I don't want it to be cheap. I don't want it to be as like just awful as the Inhumans looks.
Yeah.
Like Inhumans look so bad, I don't even want to watch it. Like I'm not going to waste my time on it.
And a lot of people are just discovering the Titans, and I think they are an important franchise in the comic book market.
Yeah.
I'm not the Titans reader, but a lot of people like them, so I want those people to get a good show.
I mean, I like the Titans, right? And they've been in cartoons.
Yeah.
So we've been like animated series.
Yeah, Young Justice is kind of like a Teen Titans show.
Yeah. And like Young Justice was phenomenal. I love Young Justice still. I can't wait for season 3 when that finally comes out, right? Yeah. You know, it's just going to leave a bad taste in everybody's mouth if this sucks as much as Inhumans does. And yeah, I mean, I hope Warner Brothers is really doubling down on making this a good show.
I hope they will. It would be a shame if they, especially after the Inhumans debacle,
mm-hmm.
to not double down on Teen Titans or Titans.
Yeah. And the thing for me, like the creative team behind it, like Greg Berlanti and Akiva Goldsman, Greg Berlanti does like Heated Arrow and Flash, like he's behind those shows. And I guess Legends of Tomorrow as well.
I think he's behind all the DC TV universe things.
And so those are all on CW. So they all have that CW kind of look about them, which was hilarious because they even mentioned that in Supergirl when the Flash does the crossover into the Supergirl show and they get in front of Calista Flockhart,
who's
like the main boss, I guess, in the Supergirl show. And they're all standing in front of her and she looks like, you kids look like a bunch of characters from a CW show right now. Oh, that's so meta. Great line. But I hope that they don't do that to this show. I hope it's not just another CW show, and set in that kind of world. I hope it's in its own thing, and I hope they can craft something. Because again, you're going to have an alien with Starfire. I don't know who the rest of the... We did really, really bad. We didn't plan to actually talk about this in this level of detail.
Yeah.
But Beast Boy, who's potentially turning into animals and stuff.
Girls, you know, it's kind of shenanigans. Cyborg?
Cyborg won't be in it because he's in the DC EU now. So he's being promoted into the Justice League. I'm not sure if Raven is going to be it. So yeah, it's going to be like... So Raven is... She's like magic. Starfire is going to be like an alien with like flight and laser style powers with massive hair. Beast Boy turns into animals. Nightwing's flipping around all over the place. Like, this is going to be a crazy show. I want them to really make it crazy and cool, not crazy and just cheap like Inhumans. Because that's the whole point. Like, Inhumans was supposed to be a crazy show as well.
Yeah.
Because they're literally like another version of Mutant. So they've all got these powers. It should be spectacular when they're on screen. Instead, it looks like, again, a high school production. You know?
It also should be this great drama because the Inhuman Society is very well was very well fleshed out in the comics.
Yeah. I mean, Inhumans had the potential to be like the Marvel TV's version of Game of Thrones.
Yep.
And they really threw that away.
Yep.
So.
Yeah.
Anyway. Before we get any more depressed, let's move on.
To more, well, I don't know if there are better news, but...
Well, yeah, so movie news.
There are good
news.
Things in there.
Movie news. So this is going to be a mixed pot of movie news. So the first one being the Obi-Wan spin-off movie. So apparently this is in development.
Yes.
And how do you feel about this,
Mike? I feel good about this. Because
we
need an Obi-Wan movie. I've been shitting on the Han Solo movie. for a long time now. But I think Obi-Wan has more potential, I think, because even if they scrapped the whole expanded universe stuff for Han Solo, that he was a cadet at the Imperial Academy and met Chewbacca as a prisoner of the Empire and stuff, they could tell a good story with Han Solo, but I don't care about Han Solo's time before he enters in episode 4 as much as I did, as I do care for Obi-Wan's story between episodes 3 and 4.
I can understand that. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, from a hero's journey point of view, Han's story really starts, I guess, in episode 4.
Yeah.
With him starting that hero's journey. Before that, he was just in his normal life, being a pirate, or a smuggler. But, the real arc for him is really what happens after that.
Yeah.
The story of how he becomes a smuggler, maybe not so compelling.
Yeah.
Because he's a survivor, so, we can all see that happening. But at the same token, Obi-Wan's story is a little bit more complex. Because he's had multiple, story arcs in his time that we've already seen, right? So there's the prequels, and then the original trilogy as well. So even in between those, he's also had his arc in Clone Wars and in the other shows as well. So we've got a lot more invested with his progression over time.
Yeah, and then
I think with Han.
There's this book by John Jackson Miller, I think. It's just called Kenobi. I mean, the story is scrapped now, but it's set on Tatooine in his time between episodes 3 and 4. And I loved this. I loved it because it shows him. He still retains his how should I put it? He's such a dignified character. Everything Obi-Wan does seems so dignified, especially in the Clone Wars. And now he gets confronted outside of his comfort zone with conflicts. And he doesn't have the Jedi Order to rely on. He just has to improvise, to pretend to not be a Jedi. And he tries to keep his dignity in doing so while protecting Luke. It's just that already was an interesting story.
Okay.
That could have been incorporated in a movie. That book would make a good movie.
So it was just called Kenobi?
I think
but it's no longer a part of the Star Wars canon.
It's still in publication. You can still get it, but the story is not canon. As if it makes any difference. It's all made up shit.
No, this is very important, Martin. If it's not canon, I don't want to know about it. It's just your head canon at that point.
Oh, yeah. No, I just realized.
If you're going to take that tack, this whole thing's pointless.
Yeah, but you're absolutely right. But, they could make such a good movie out of this book, but it's no longer canon. Who cares? Just get Evan on the Evan on the phone, give him a costume, and go.
No, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, I would love to see an Obi-Wan Kenobi movie, and I want Ewan McGregor to come back.
Yeah,
I think
absolutely. Yeah.
Ewan McGregor needs to come back as Obi-Wan. That would be cool. And that would be like he'd be the right age now to do the story, which is between 3 and 4.
Yeah.
Like episode 3 and episode 4. So I don't know. Like, I don't know what he was doing on Tatooine for all that time. Was he just, I'm just imagined he was just sitting in a cave, like smoking cigarettes and looking into the distance. In a meditative state,
he was visited by Qui-Gon, who taught him how to become a Force ghost.
Oh, that's right, because he was able to ascend into the Force at the end. Well, which is what happens in 4, right? So that's why his body disappears.
That's something that doesn't happen naturally to Jedi.
Right. It happens, it's just effectively. There was a really weird, interesting video that I watched, and I can't remember what the context or how I watched it, because it was one of those ones where I'm just randomly on YouTube and it was the middle of the night and I fell asleep. And they were talking about how Anakin's going to the dark side, and how it was all about how the Jedi Order themselves, effectively none of them followed the teachings of what they were trying to get Anakin to follow. So they were all being they all broke the rules, all the rules that they set up and told Anakin he had to follow. They all broke them. Mace Windu giving into anger at the end. They asked Anakin to spy on the Emperor, or who becomes the Emperor. And so, it sort of positions Anakin as this character who was just caught in this conflict where this order that he thought was right and just was also not right and just. So he didn't know what he had to do. And that's effectively why he turns to the dark side, because to him, there is no dark side, because even the guys on the light side are also breaking all the rules. So what's the point? So he just saw that as the best way to sort of go forward, I guess. What is also interesting, though, as I was watching that, I was thinking about the Grey Jedi, which are potentially coming up in episode 8.
Yeah.
Which is Jedi that do bend the rules. And so, I don't know. You probably know way more about The Grey Jedi than I do.
I just know
but
that.
It's effectively no longer about light and darkness. It's about walking the middle path.
Yeah, because Luke did, in the expanded universe, he used dark side powers. He threw around the occasional force lightning.
Yeah. And so the expanded universe is also being the non-canon.
Yeah, yeah. But from the trailer, I wonder if Luke is the bad guy in episode 8. It's something I've come up with this week.
Yeah.
Because his action figure, they have this force link feature where they spout a few lines. And yeah. He's basically sci-fi Jesus.
Right.
There's a trust in the force, my friend, and the force is strong with you and stuff. And I'm like, oh, yeah, you're throwing a curveball here, dude.
Oh, really?
With your white robes. I don't know. I think...
Are you being, like, super cynical? Is he sounding like Palpatine to you? Like,
no, absolutely not. He sounds way too friendly and way too upbeat. Because
well, it is a kid's toy, right?
I mean, I just wanted to say, yeah, it's a kid's toy. But, you know, then I thought about what if Luke is actually... What if Luke is in exile because he's the reason for Snoke coming into power and the dark side rising? But yeah, we'll definitely do an episode 8 episode where we can talk about all this stuff.
Yeah. And I think we'll, just before episode 8 hits, that will be like an episode 8 centric topic. That will be great. I just got sent this meme by a friend. Because they released the picture of Snoke, so Snoke being the big bad from the new Star Wars movies, and he's got that dent in his forehead.
Is it the one?
Have you seen this?
The guy, the stormtrooper who hits his head.
Yes.
In episode 4. This is amazing. Yeah.
So it's great. Yeah, so it's a picture of Snoke with that massive gash in his forehead. And then a picture of the stormtrooper as they're walking through the doors to get 3PO and R2-D2, I think, were in... This is episode 4, right?
It's 4, yeah.
Yeah, and this one stormtrooper hits his head as all the stormtroopers walk in. It's fantastic. So yeah, he grows up to become Snoke.
And this store is responsible for the demise of the Galactic Republic.
There you go.
Good thing they blew the Death Star.
Right. So moving from one Uber franchise to the not-so-well-oiled machine of the DCEU. So the Joker origin movie.
Yeah. Like anybody asked for it.
Just because, yeah, because we're talking about stuff that we need in our lives, right? So a Joker origin movie with a different Joker, so not Jared Leto.
Jared Leto, yeah. At one point, and, I thought they mentioned...
Produced by Martin Scorsese, apparently.
Yeah, and they want to get to Leonardo DiCaprio via Scorsese to play the Joker.
Do you see that happening? Like, do you...
I mean, I it probably won't happen, but... We live in a world where Warner Brothers wants to make a Joker origin story movie. Like, what's the last nail in the coffin of a doomed Joker franchise? Tell his origin story.
I don't get it. It'll be cool. It'll be cool, I guess. And so this is like one of the arguments that people have about the Joker is like one of the things that makes the Joker character cool is that he has no origin.
Yeah.
Is that the Joker just exists because, I mean, he's effectively a lord of chaos, right? So you don't know where he comes from, and that's the whole point.
Yeah.
And they actually say that in The Dark Knight. So they actually mention like there's no record of this dude ever existing anywhere.
Yeah. That was an amazing idea to use it in the movie.
Yeah. And now to go in and actually tell that story. And so that's what I liked about the way Gotham did it as well, is they kind of had that Joker play for a while, but then they kind of like, they took a leftwards turn on that whole thing to keep it open. And yep. I liked that. And I think that's what makes the Joker compelling as a character, is that he is this just mysterious figure. To now go in and say, all right, now I'm going to tell you the story of exactly where he came from. It's like seeing behind the curtain. It's like when you know the magician's secret, the magic no longer is compelling.
And even if you make it vague enough, like an arthouse production, and leave it completely open-ended with the question, is this character becoming the Joker? Will this character become the Joker? it's such an unsatisfying experience for the general cinema public.
Yeah, but for like anyone who's watching this story, right?
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, so to me, I'm going to make a sideways comparison. It's like How I Met Your Mother.
Yeah.
Like the whole concept of the show is which one's the mother? And then at the end of it, everyone's unsatisfied.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know if you've seen the end of How I Met Your Mother. She did. Yeah, you know, because it's like, well, all right, then that was the answer. Let's all move on. Because, like, there's no more tension. And I think that's the risk here, is you take away the tension of who the Joker is and why the Joker is. So I think it's just a bad idea. I can see that if they could potentially do something where they have flashbacks and they have DiCaprio as, like, an older Joker. And then they could do Jared Leto as, like, a flashback Joker. So it's the same character. You're just seeing him in two different pieces of time.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I'm pretty sure like DiCaprio and Jared Leto are like the same age almost. So I don't know how that's going to work. So I mean, are they going to have to cast like how many different Jokers are we going to have at the end of this? So I don't know. I don't know if I like it.
Especially DC Comics hasn't even lifted the curtain on the whole. There was a story arc where Batman gains godlike. He becomes a new god, essentially, taking over from Metron. And the first thing he asks is, who's the Joker? And then he finds out there are four or five.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And was never mentioned again since then. So I don't know if that's still a topic or it got mentioned off screen. Like, you know, I was drunk with power at that point.
Yeah.
Something like that.
And it's kind of like, well, because I asked the question, I actually knew the answer anyway. And then because I'm God, I actually made it happen. I don't know. I mean, maybe they could. I mean, again, why would God have to ask a question? You know,
I had glow fingers. Have you seen the costume? The Batman as Metron?
No.
Because he had like from the first knuckle of his finger to the tip, they glowed.
Oh, really?
Yeah. When I mentioned him, I always said glow finger because there was this movie, Bowfinger's Big Score.
Oh, yeah.
And when he revealed the identity of the Joker to himself, I said Glowfinger's Big Score.
Yeah. Glowfinger.
Yeah, that's such a great costume design when he sits there with the crossed fingers and the tips are glowing.
Right. Yeah, we're going to have to get a picture of that for the title card of this episode.
It's such an insane, a great but insane idea. And
who wrote that?
Here. Jeff Johns, Darkseid War was the name of the whole story. Yeah, I think the Great Darkseid War or anything.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, I've not seen that one. I'm going to definitely have to look this one up.
Just look the cover up. It's amazing. You know, it's still, I'm still entertained by just thinking about it.
Just the idea of Batman as a god, though. I think he's just too dark and cynical to be. He would be a pretty bad god.
You think so? I think he would be. He would show us his kind side then, because he can do anything, you know.
Maybe given enough power. Maybe that's the problem. Maybe that's the problem. He just needs more power.
Yeah, more power for Batman. She can't take any more power. To go back to Star Trek.
That is the best Scottish accent I've heard today.
Thank you.
That was good. Yeah. Mr. Scotty. So staying, just finishing off the Batman or the Jared Leto Joker theme. So Margot Robbie and Jared Leto coming back for another solo movie or the same solo movie?
I think it's the same solo movie. The headline hit like the next day, but I forgot to include the link. Good preparation. Okay. But,
yeah, because I was like, they can't do an origin movie and a solo movie.
A solo origin movie.
DC. DC's like herding cats. Like every kind of director... Or like every creator in DC is doing their own thing and like no one's paying attention.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, I mean, just imagining it's like a nursery, like with kids and every kid's just doing like they're painting on the walls. They're like, I don't know, just doing crazy stuff. And like no one's paying attention.
And they put Wonder Woman in the only group that's behaved.
She's the only kid that's kind of like inside like a playpen being like, hey guys, you know, does anyone else want to like... do something fun. Everyone else is like, nah,
no.
Running around, This is like Cheerios inside the fish tank. It's just, it's bedlam. It's, you know? All right. And so.
Oh, I wrote this name. Now that I read the headline that I put into our, into our OneNote, did you just realized this as well, yeah?
Well, no. So I was reading that and I'm trying to think of a segue to go from Star Wars to the Joker and then back to Star Wars, because this is now a Star Wars topic again. I can't think of a segue, so this is the segue. But then, yes, you also spelt his name as Colin Trevorrow.
Yeah.
So it's no one for Colin Trevorrow. It's Colin Trevorrow. So does this bode well for what Star Trek Nine's, Star Wars Nine's going to look like? And now, coming out of, well, that's the point. Colin's gone, right? So.
Yeah, he's.
Colin Trevorrow is no longer directing Star Wars Colin's episode. Oh my God,
that poor man.
And they're bringing JJ back.
Yeah.
How does that make you feel?
I think I wrote a tweet or something like, Ron Howard's a pretty exacting choice now, huh?
Yes.
JJ. I'm sorry.
Was Colin Trevorrow fired or did he actually leave? Like,
I think it was a mutual agreement that he should vacate the director's chair as well as the writer's chair alongside his co-writer.
Wow. So, I mean, that is a pretty big change. That's a pretty big change. Because one of the things that I think was a little bit disheartening to hear a couple of weeks ago, and I think it was Kylo Ren, so I forgot his name, Adam Driver.
Mm-hmm.
Is it Adam Driver? In an interview said that he didn't actually know what Kylo Ren's story was. Like, they hadn't planned it out when they were doing episode 7. So there was no actual plan for the trilogy. Mm. And now that JJ's back, I don't know whether that's going to help any. Because one of my biggest chief complaints about JJ Abrams is that he doesn't care for endings.
Yeah.
Anyone who's watched Lost can feel that pain. Because, like, he did, and I bring this up a lot, he did a TED Talk where he talked about his whole thing is the mystery. His whole thing is knowing, is wondering what's in the box, but never actually finding out. And so, that's the whole thing, is that you can't have a story without an end. And the end of the story is what makes it satisfying. If they're continuing to plan to do Star Wars as trilogies, then episode 9 not having a clear ending for where the story is going is going to be very disappointing. If, on the other hand, Disney is going to be running Star Wars forever, and there's not really going to be trilogies anymore, it's just going to be like an ongoing serial, then I guess that works. But at the same time, you're never, ever going to have a sense of satisfaction or, just feel like you've got any sort of closure with the story, because it's going to be like effectively an intergalactic version of The Bold and the Beautiful. It's just going to go on forever.
Yeah.
It's going to be a soap opera. So I'm not excited by this. So like you said, isn't Ron Howard now an exciting choice?
But then I think with Star Wars, I think that JJ comes prepared. I can't imagine him having written out a possible arc for all the characters that he introduced in episode 7. But then I'm going to lean out of the window very wide with saying that I think that Star Wars isn't making as much money or isn't as running as smoothly for Disney as does the Marvel movies. And I wouldn't be surprised if they'd call quits for a while after episode 9.
Oh.
I think they're going to focus on what's making actual money, the toys and the paraphernalia and Star Wars land and stuff. That's going to be super huge, of course. But I think on the production side, we're going to see a slouch or the ditch that's being currently carved out, being filled with new expanded universe stuff. We're gonna see a lot of books, a lot of comic books and stuff. But I think we won't gonna see any new stuff, even with the new characters. That's my prediction.
Yeah. I mean, it is, from a business point of view, I think to a point you're right. There's a large percentage of the money they make is through the merchandising.
Yeah.
Right. The theme parks and the toys and the clothes and everything. The movies are the engine that keep that going.
Yeah.
So they need to keep it in the public space, at least on a maybe yearly or semi annual basis, at least. So, you know, I think maybe that's a good thing. Maybe, you know, get this trilogy out of the way, if it's a trilogy. They could probably take a year or two break, because they're going to have, like, the Obi-Wan spin-off movie, the Han Solo movie, and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Put that in the time slot of when you would normally expect a Star Wars movie, because that's what they're saying, is looks like we're starting to get a Christmas with Star Wars
yeah.
type cadence now. So it'll be good if, you know, that becomes a yearly thing, but it doesn't have to be a trilogy movie. It can be like an extended universe story. Because like Rogue One, I really enjoyed Rogue One. I thought as a self-contained story, I thought it was cool. So if we can continue to keep the engine going with stuff like that while buying time to actually put together an actual trilogy type story that has a beginning, a middle, and an end with yeah. character growth and like, you know, all the cool things that we want from it, that will be great.
Yeah.
Whether they do that or not, who knows? I mean, the showrunner, I guess you can say, Kathleen Kennedy, who's in charge of all of the Star Wars movies as Kevin Feige is in charge of the Marvel stuff. She's got a very, I don't know, it seems like she's got a very specific vision of how she wants these things to go. So to one point, that's good. But then also, how can you have a specific vision, but then not have clear storylines for your characters, especially one as important as Kylo Ren, right?
Yeah.
So he's the Zuko. Everyone's saying he's the Zuko of the Star Wars universe.
Yeah.
And you need to plan that out for how that's going to work. Otherwise, it's just going to fall apart.
And the thing is, Marvel is, as commercial as those movies are, they are getting fresh talent, and they let the fresh talent do their thing to a specific point, of course. And
oh, yeah.
I think Star Wars is missing that. We already saw that with Rogue One, where I'm really interested in hearing all the behind-the-scenes talk that's going to
yeah.
become public in a few years' time. Because they had problems with, and I think the Colin Trevorrow thing could be the same thing as with Gareth Edwards. They,
yeah.
they're competent filmmakers, but they lack the experience that somebody like JJ brings with him.
Yeah. And I, you know, it's also, I think, relationship. Kathleen Kennedy she's drawing a very hard line
yeah.
between what she's willing to concede and what she needs to make sure happens in these movies. And that's probably why the directors who come across, you know, like maybe they've got their own vision for how they want it to be. And she's just like, nope, not going to happen. You do it my way or it's the highway. And so Gareth Edwards, I think, was unceremoniously let go. Right?
No,
he was actually fired, right?
No, he stayed on production. He had just had a lot of reshoots that were done by a different director.
Oh, who did Ron Howard?
The Phil Lord and Chris Miller.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, Phil Lord. Like, I remember that wrong. Yeah, I mean they were let go. They were like,
yeah.
hit the road, Jack. So I think, you know, it's quite interesting that, again, how quick in succession did that happen, right? So Phil Lord and Chris Miller were booted, and then I think it was like a month or two later that Colin Trevorrow left. Of mutual agreement. But, you know, if everyone is leaving...
yeah, who stays behind? And the thing is, what did Rian Johnson do to stay in such good favors? Because that's a guy who clearly has a vision, he has ideas, he has a specific sense of humor.
Yeah.
And apparently the production had smooth sails all the way, at least from the things that got released into the public. So what did he do
yeah.
that made him different from Colin Trevorrow or Phil Lord or Chris Miller? Because he's in the same ballpark. That's an interesting thing. Did he sell out completely, or was he professional enough to understand what his role in this machinery is?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see, like, again, to hear the story of how all of that came together. It could very well be that he's just maybe a better team player.
Yeah, could be.
You know? I mean, at the end of the day, movies are a team sport. So yeah. as much as the director is central to the vision of what it's supposed to be, everyone else needs to work together to make it happen. And Rian Johnson?
Yeah.
Rian Johnson just might be much better at doing that. Sorry, my vacuum cleaner just popped up there in case. It's the closest thing I have to R2-D2, if you heard
Oh,
that.
You have a Roomba. Okay, I thought it's just you have an alarm on the thing that tells you, oh, it's time to vacuum the floors again. Oh,
no, it's a Neato. It's not a Roomba, but yeah. I talk to it. I call it R2-D2. I actually call it Bumpy because it bumps around.
Bumpy is great.
It's just a, yeah, it's a random random factoid for today's episode. Okay, so we just have to wait to see what happens with this J.J. Abrams thing. But in other exciting directorial news, Taika Waititi in talks for the Akira remake.
Yeah, he's like cinema Jesus.
Cinema Jesus. There's a lot of Jesus in today's episode as well. So Taika Waititi, I mean, he did, he's doing Thor Ragnarok, and from all indications, that is looking fantastic.
Yeah.
So I can't wait for that to come out. And so Akira, this is going to be interesting. You're going to have like a different, because these are all so many different cultures. It's an American production of a Japanese property with a, I mean, Taika Waititi's, he's Hawaiian. So he's got like
New
a,
Zealand, I think. He's a Kiwi. Is he,
oh, yes, yes. He's New Zealand. I should have known. He's a Kiwi. and so like, so he's got effectively like a Polynesian background, right? So
yeah.
This will be awesome. Yeah. You know, I can't wait to see it.
Suddenly.
Because, yeah.
Yeah, suddenly it seems like a good idea to make an Akira movie.
Yeah. Because Akira is like, it's one of those, what's the word? My brain is failing right now. It's one of those ones that you just have to watch. Like it's yeah. It's an icon of a movie.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's very strange if you're not used to anime and manga, because it goes down like it's the last third of Akira is just crazy.
Yeah.
And I don't know, you know, and so one of the things is like, how will that go down? If you're going to make it for Western audiences effectively, how are you going to interpret that? Do you do it line by line, or do you interpret it? And what potentially people may say is water it down, or do you just go all in?
The thing is, Akira, the anime, is already a watered down version of Akira, the manga.
Right.
So adapting it, I think studios learned from Ghost in the Shell.
From I hope the life they learned from Ghost in the Shell.
Adaption. And if they give, if Taika Waititi does realize, will make the live action movie, then I think it's going to be a good thing. Or at least you can, I don't know, it won't be as disappointing as like when, I don't know who was attached the last time. I forgot.
I don't think anyone was attached. I think they just kind of went around in circles for a long time.
Right? Who was in talks? It was a big name director who was attached to the project for a while. But I completely forgot his name. Let's look it up.
You can hear both of us typing right now.
Justin Lin
from
The Fast and the Furious. I think. Then Jordan Peele was on to write the script. Oh no, right. he was even set for as a director. Yeah, and I think that those were all interesting choices. Especially Peele would have been interesting. Would have made of Akira, but getting somebody with Taika Waititi's sensibilities, especially.
Just, I mean, the visual style is what I'm going for.
And the whole body horror part.
Yeah.
In the Waititi lens.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be copyrighted. So, Waititi view.
Waititi view. Yeah. It'll be something to look forward to for sure.
Yeah.
You know, I'm really interested to see that. And again, it'll be such a cool interpretation. So coming from all these different cultural backgrounds and being able to interpret that. So yeah, exciting times for Akira.
If it's being realized that way, if everything falls into place.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a great fit. So hopefully it happens.
Yeah.
Cool. And then moving on to the Superman movie.
Yes.
3-hour extended edition. So we're like all over the place. We went like Star Wars, DC. Star Wars, Marvel, DC.
Back to DC. But we sorry, did use these times.
Do we need this?
Yes.
So what's the headline, first of all?
There was a TV version of the original Superman movie with Christopher Reeves as the Man of Steel, directed by Richard Donner, I think. I hold that movie in high regard. it's definitely a Superman movie of its time. It was made in the 70s, in the late 70s, I think. So it's not comparable to a modern interpretation of Superman, but it still holds so much of the character.
Yeah.
It's such a honest Superman movie. And there was a TV version that's 3 hours long, and I've never seen it. And I'm hyped that it's finally being released on Blu-ray. And I'm looking forward to watching it. I don't know, but it's more of a good movie, I think.
Yeah, but so, I mean, I love the Christopher Reeve. The first Christopher Reeve Superman's awesome. You're right. Like, when you rewatch it now, it's a different style of movie.
Yeah.
It takes its time. It's got an honesty about it. It's got an earnestness about it. And there's not a lot of action, you know?
Yeah.
So the movie's almost, you know, to me, it's so good also because of what it left out. Whereas now they're going to potentially put a lot of that stuff back in to make it 3 hours long. And I worry.
Okay.
Is it Superman just eating breakfast in the morning? Like, what are they doing for 3 hours? You just see him wake up making eggs, you know?
It would be amazing, you know? Christopher Reeves could sell that. Okay, how do you make eggs with superpowers?
I would sit down careful. With Superman and eat eggs. Yeah.
See him being super careful with the eggs, you know?
No, like, I want to see him, like, I want to see him scramble it. I want to see him, like, break the eggs into a bowl, start scrambling, and then use his heat vision to cook it in the bowl. Like, that would be so cool.
That's going to happen. You got to put that in.
There was a, there's an episode of Dean Cain Superman in The Adventures of Lois and Clark, where he's drinking coffee at work and his coffee gets cold and he uses his heat vision to heat it up again. And I'm like, I want to be able to do that.
And Jimmy touches the cup later on because he heats up the cup and burns his fingers. Yeah. That was such a great show.
So maybe that's what it is. I mean, like, Lois and Clark, The Adventures of Superman really gave us the taste of just Superman in between action scenes, like just being a guy.
That's all the Superman we ever need.
And the shenanigans. So seeing Christopher Reeve do that for 3 hours, maybe it's worth it. So, I mean, it'll be interesting. I'll definitely check it out. When is this actually happening, though?
There's no date was being given, but it should happen this year.
Okay, just in time for Christmas. So if you need a stocking stuffer.
Gonna buy two of them. For
buy two. Nice. All right. Cool. And that was pretty much it for the movie news. I don't think we had anything else that you can think. Can you think of anything else?
Nothing in particular.
All right. So we got about 10 minutes then for our time today to go through the Defenders. Just before that, I mean, there have been a couple of trailers released for Tomb Raider and The Punisher. Martin hasn't seen those, but we were going to see if we can watch them watch them live and get his reaction while it's going.
Okay, I'll start at the Tomb Raider, I'm sorry.
So what's your expectation before you watch this?
Of Tomb Raider, not much, because I think the video game reboot was definitely a more modern take on the character, but it still didn't feel right.
Yeah.
But I only played the first game.
The new Tomb Raider games, yeah, right? Yeah, yeah, so they effectively like rebooted the Lara Croft character and the whole story. But you didn't like that. You liked the original version.
I mean, I only played the very first Tomb Raider game back in the late 90s.
Right.
I liked that one because it reminded me of, how was it called? Prince of Persia?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And it felt big and it felt adventurous and you could climb stuff and do stuff. And obviously I was raging with hormones at the time. So it was the right game for me, but it wasn't anything I would have followed into its sequels. The trailer feels like truly a video game movie. They just put an actor that almost looks like the digital version of Lara Croft.
Like the digital character in the games.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's and Nick Frost is in there too. How funny. Yeah.
It's just generic action movie, video game remake.
It'll feel a boring night, and perhaps it's only a trailer. Perhaps the movie itself will have, will dazzle us in some way, shape or form. But I don't know. Bring those Uncharted movies and write the characters a bit better, and we don't need Tomb Raider movies anymore. Yeah.
No, not really a whole lot to report there.
No.
not excited at all. No. So don't bring back Tomb Raider. We don't need it. Okay. Lara Croft with Angelina Jolie was all I needed.
Then no, I didn't even like those movies.
The first one I thought was fantastic. I mean, Lara Croft. I thought she was great. I thought Angelina Jolie as Lara Croft in the first one was great.
But. Yeah, she really fit the role on a visual standpoint, but, you know, give her pants. That's my...
No. Again, raging hormones. Yeah. I didn't need the pants. I mean, she looked the part. She played it the way I expected her to play it.
Yeah.
I thought she did a great job, so.
Okay, I fired up the Punisher trailer.
And so it's the trailer for The Punisher. So just as a segue, as we get into the Defenders.
Oh, God. Netflix, lay off the bad music. First Nirvana and now Metallica.
I mean, you know you're going to get a lot of hate for people saying that Nirvana and Metallica is bad music. But I think it's just the use of those songs in these shows.
I'm over Metallica at this point.
All right. Okay. So you're actually saying you don't like Metallica. Okay.
You know, I'm a big metal guy, but I've never got into Metallica. Don't know. Okay, but back to the trailer. I don't know. I'm not that keen on the Punisher. It's like who was the writer? Garth Ennis, when he wrote the Punisher, said that it's the most unrealistic of comic book characters because that guy would be dead in 2 minutes if somebody decided to take on the mob that way.
I think the Punisher really exists in that space. That's about it's basic like rage and revenge fantasy.
Yeah.
The whole character of the Punisher is just angry teenage boys wanting to just destroy everything, you know? And I think the Punisher serves as an outlet for that sentiment. So, yeah, I mean, I've never really connected with the Punisher at a character level. It's a cool character, I think. But at the same time, I'm like, it's not one that I've followed the story of. If you had to do it, though, if you had to do this kind of story, which is effectively your revenge fantasy and ultra-violence, there's also a new Bruce Willis movie coming out. So the trailer came out for that, for Death Wish. There's, a remake of Death Wish. And I think this looks a lot better than that.
Of course, yes. The Punisher has to be... The Punisher is a great character because he is it's actually a more believable revenge story because he's a highly trained expert in the field of killing people.
Yeah.
And he's somebody who basically has... He has nothing... Or in his view of the world, he's got nothing left to lose. And as you saw in Daredevil in the second season, where he's a side character, when he goes into the pawn shop and the guy tries to sell him pedophilia, basically, he goes to town. And it's not only about revenge, it's about justice.
He does have a moral code.
And
which is what keeps him centered, I guess.
And if you walk that fine path, they give him his sidekick from the comics, or the hacker guy, Bit or Bite, he was called, I think.
Right.
Something like that. If he gets the characters to bounce off.
Yeah, if it's just him walking around shooting things, it's a little bit one-dimensional.
Yeah.
He needs somebody to talk to. And I think Karen Page, I think, really served that role in in Daredevil season 2.
Yeah.
Because you need him to talk to someone so you can understand what's going on in his head. And I think Karen will also be in this show, right? So she's in the trailer.
Yeah.
And
I think that the Punisher as a character needs to be reminded of his humanity. Well,
yeah.
That he's still a human being. And that's what I always liked about when he's been paired up with Spider-Man, for example, that those superhero characters understand his pain and understand that there's more at work in those universes than just punching colorful people in the face. There's real crime in the Marvel mm-hmm. universe, and that somebody has to step up, but that fighting real crime changes you in other ways than fighting costumed crime.
Yeah.
I think that's
yeah, well, that's very Nitschke, isn't it? Like, when you stare into the abyss stares into you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, I mean, that's a great pivot into the Defenders.
Yeah.
Because that's what I liked about that world, is that there is the actual real crime. So the rest of the Marvel Cinematic Universe is very comic booky. You know, it's all costumed characters
yeah.
fighting other costumed characters, and it's all very colorful and bright. And the Defenders series is the street level. It's real crime, it's real gangsters, and it's real violence to real people who are basically innocent. Like, you don't get the sense in the Marvel movies that real people are being affected, because you generally never see a lot of real people.
Yeah.
You know? But in The Defenders, what I like is they, I mean, and the rest of the Netflix shows, is they take their time to build that world, to show you the kids on the street and the people trying to pay rent, going about their lives living in Hell's Kitchen in Harlem.
Yeah.
So we've got a couple minutes left, so just on Defenders, you know, I just finished that last night at like 2 o'clock in the morning, because I knew we were going to talk about it today, so I needed to finish it. I thought the ending was good. I was satisfied that I ended up watching the show. I didn't think it was as bad as I was expecting it to be, but at the same time, there was some definite, there was sloppiness in this show, which I was like, really? Come on, people.
And that's my biggest gripe as well, sloppiness. I mean, it was already in a production pipeline, and I think nobody thought that Iron Fist would be as badly regarded as it was in the end.
Yeah. Because a large part of the storyline hangs on the Iron Fist character.
Yeah.
What I liked about that, though, and I don't know, it was a little bit meta, is at several points during the show, they actually tell Iron Fist how stupid he is. Yeah. Yeah. And I'm like, that's very meta. I really enjoyed Iron Fist in this show, though.
Yeah.
And so I know you were really looking forward to Iron Fist, so it'll be interesting to see your take on this. He grew on me as a character, and by the end of this, I'm pretty much a fan. You know, like I would look forward to another Finn Jones Iron Fist series, if they made one. Because I thought the first Iron Fist, yeah, was just, you know, we discussed that already, had a lot of glaring holes and bad things about it. But he kind of found his place. I don't know, and maybe I just like Finn Jones looking sad and depressed through this whole thing and everyone telling him how stupid he is, and that's where he kind of finds his sense of character. But I thought it worked this time around.
Okay, dear people, dear listeners, I think we
lost
Niff at this point. And I'm going to try and bring him back. You're back!
What happened? And we're back! Yeah, I lost you, did I?
No, I lost you. You gloriously froze in
that Oh, yeah, you did the same thing. It looked the same to both of us. And I continued recording, so the time...
Yeah, me too. Scale. No, nothing's lost.
So, all right. So we're back after some technical issues, and we were just discussing how Iron Fist is better this time around.
Interference from Kun Lun.
Yeah, and so what was your take on that? And sorry, I mean,
I thought you froze up again.
I corrected myself mid-sentence. So let's start that again. And we're back after some brief technical issues. And we were discussing about how Iron Fist is a lot better now than he was in the previous series. So, Martin, what was your take on that?
He's definitely portrayed better, like you said. He seems to have found, well, at the end of the series, he finds his place, which is an interesting switch.
Yeah.
Because he essentially takes over He's
yeah. Okay, so spoilers.
Yeah, spoilers for Defenders. He takes over from Daredevil, or he gets inspired enough by Matt Murdock to take over protecting Hell's Kitchen or New York in general.
And so, yeah, so he effectively, you know, it's almost like he lost Kan Lang, but he's got New York, you know? And that's what he says at the end, effectively. Like, I feel like it's starting to feel like home or something like that. And that's good. Like, I'm glad that he can not just be lost, like a lost puppy,
yeah,
like he was through the whole of the first half of this series and also his own series. I thought the last third of the Defenders was awesome. Like, just yep, the action sequences. It felt like it took a long time to get to that. There was a lot of setup. That's why I thought this was going to be a 10 episode thing. I'm like, how long is this going to drag on for?
Yeah.
So I'm glad it was only 8 episodes. Like, I was able to actually finish it within a week. So.
And I finished it in like a day because I had the day off and I started in the morning again.
Yeah.
What? It's over?
Well, I would, yeah.
Yeah.
I would love to be able to have 8 hours to be able to binge. This just hasn't happened in a while.
I prepared for this. I did the housework in advance and Susie was out of town.
Right.
So I was on my own.
Nice.
I had nothing better to do than to binge Defenders.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's just me and the Defenders. So just going through the characters then, I mean, let's start with Sigourney Weaver. What did you think of her as Alexandra and the Hand in general as the bad guys?
I think the Hand was, the Hand lost the last bit of credibility it had with me because Sigourney Weaver was criminally underused.
Oh yeah, I thought so. It was really badly, like, as an organization and like the characters within, I thought were just really bad.
Yeah. Madame Gao.
And there was... Yeah.
I mean, she became Yoda at the end of episode 2, which was ridiculous.
I was waiting for her, like in that scene when Yoda walks into the fight with Obi-Wan, Anakin, and Count Dooku. He just kind of like uses his walking stick and then brings out the lightsaber. I was expecting Gao to go full Yoda at that point, like doing backflips.
But she only used the Force.
She only used the Force. And there was no real escalation. Like, it would have been better, I think, if the five fingers of the Hand, when they came together or when they got to the substance, actually leveled up in some way.
Yeah.
Because they were on the same level the whole time. We'd already seen the Defenders fight them several times before.
Yeah.
And so it didn't feel like there was any other, like, higher stakes.
And you had the opportunity to show a high stakes battle with Luke Cage and the black finger, so to say.
Oh, the
yeah,
the other.
I'm sorry.
I don't know if that's gonna go down well.
No, I'm so sorry.
The other the Hand character. The African
American. Yeah, the African. Yeah.
What was his name, like Swambe or something? I can't remember.
The guy who, the torturer, I think, was his speciality. Dealing pain.
He was a warlord, right? They just said he was an African warlord.
Oh no, he had he used acupuncture or acupressure.
Yeah.
Which was amazing, and he was a more than formidable foe for Luke Cage. And the whole battle happens off screen.
Yeah,
but I wouldn't have introduced Baku and all the other guys as generals in the army of the Hand.
Yeah.
And maybe introduce Sigourney Weaver as a higher ranking officer.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of going away from the whole they are all equals thing, because it makes them kind of like a military style organization.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I mean, that's what they tried to set up anyway. Like, she was the leader and they were all independent. So.
And there were already no ninjas in.
Yeah.
In this
there was
well.
Way too much ninja. Like, Gao and Baku should have been the ninja arm.
Yep.
The other people that came in, you know, like all the fights were like martial arts style fights. And what really annoyed me was even in the end sequences, the big action sequences, they would cut away from the fighting because the fighting tended to go on and on and on. And it's a martial arts fight. So they all generally look the same. That's my comment around. There was no escalation. It would have been cool if it actually escalated and then, you know, Iron Fist and the Defenders had to do something, you know, that's not just more martial arts fighting, you know. And for the Defenders themselves, I think Jessica Jones is still my favorite. Yeah. She was amazing. The coolest out of all of them. Luke Cage was just Luke Cage, you know?
Yeah.
So we got more of what he was. Matt Murdock continues to be interesting. Like, I quite like the Matt Murdock character.
Really? I thought it was a bit too much. It felt like Daredevil 2.5.
I still think he's the strongest. He's the strongest action character.
Yeah.
Because Jessica Jones is, I mean, she's, you know, again, her perspective and the way she comes into this fight is not out of the sense of, like, massive burden and duty that Daredevil has. And so yeah. I think he needs to be the one that leads that charge. But Jessica Jones sees her place and fits into that.
Yeah.
But she's also, like, the one that's got the strongest sense of character, I think, in terms of who she is and that inner conflict that she has.
Yeah,
she feels... like, because she's not so convicted, you know, she doesn't have as much conviction as Daredevil.
And it's so well portrayed in the scene where the guy who spies on the family of the deceased...
Oh, yeah.
Where she takes him...
pulls him through the window.
And it sums up the whole exchange with, why does everybody do martial arts and stuff?
Yeah, exactly. So that was cool. I mean, there were parts of the show that were very good.
Yeah.
Like, all of the meta humor, the... fight sequences were actually good. There were just too many of them. And there was a lot of action, but it was all this at the same level. There was no escalation. And then, you know, besides that, there were some parts where just the costuming and the effects, like Stick's hand, when they cut off Stick's hand. Oh my God. Who's doing the makeup effects here? Because it just looks like he was just holding like a thing. Like,
yeah.
His hand didn't look like his hand was cut off at all. Like, that's... They should have just kept it out of shot. Like, I don't know why they kept on keeping it in shot and showing us this really bad prop that this dude was holding.
It's kind of the charm of the Netflix shows, I think, because it's like Daredevil's costume. He looks like a big shoulder pad.
Yeah. But what's great about that is that he's blind, so he's not seeing that anyway.
Yeah.
Like, that's why even Jessica Jones, when and she sees it, she's like, oh, really? This again?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, when he sees it, he's seeing sound reflected off it. He's not seeing light reflected off it.
Yeah. Know?
So it looks completely... He's like, yeah, this is some sick-ass costume. You know? Everyone else is like, really? It's a big shoulder pad.
Yeah. But, you know, the it adds to the cheesiness of the show.
Yeah.
Which culminates in Iron Fist's origin. Yeah, I'm the protector of Kondon.
Yeah. And I love those explanations. Like, to me, one of the best parts was just when everyone's hearing the story about Kunlun and Shao Lao and focusing his chi, and they're like, wait, what now? And I love that exchange when Iron Fist was tied up and Luke Cage was watching.
Yeah.
He tells them about Iron Fist says, like, I had to punch through Shao Lao's heart or something, and Luke Cage dismisses it, but then just sees his face and then says, all right, I will entertain your story.
Yeah.
It was done really well. And
that's something that it's great to see that the chemistry between those two actors works.
Yeah.
They work really well together.
And they needed to, because they're partners in the comics, right? So everyone's looking forward to that. And it's also, again, it was meta. Again, everyone's like really dumping on Iron Fist. And even Luke Cage is dumping on him for like most of the show. But at that one point, he just sees, it's like, all right, this guy's had enough, like, people kicking him in the pants. Let me throw him a bone, you know?
And we even tied him up.
Yeah. That's cool. Awesome. So I thought it was good. I'd give Defenders, I think, overall, probably like a 7.5 out of 10.
Yeah, that's very generous, but...
Yeah. I mean, look, it's not... It was entertaining. It gave me what I needed. And it wasn't as bad as expecting. So, you know, so I'm going to throw it an extra half a star just for that.
The only downer was that behind the gate in the hole, I thought it would be a portal to Kunlun, a safe haven or something. And then just, was a bit disappointing. The actual reason for the hand to...
Because we never really got to what the substance was, right? It looked like they were just grinding up the bones like ancient Chinese medicine.
Yeah. And because they said they want to return to Kunlun, I thought perhaps Kunlun...
was behind the door.
The door, yeah. Jumps around different places in the world when it needs to hide. Like the TARDIS.
Or it has different access points, yeah, and that's yeah, just and, one of and like that's an, one of the another access one points. Of them. That's very kind of like Doctor Strange's world.
Yeah.
Right? I thought it was interesting that it was like a fossilized, skeletonized dragon skeleton that was down there. I don't know how it got down there, but it was interesting. I just didn't think that would have been good enough to explain the substance and why they were after it. And yeah, I mean, the whole point is that they were just trying to buy themselves more time to eventually get back into Kun Lun. But yeah, I mean, again, parts of the story, very sloppily handled. But overall, with 8 episodes, I can't complain.
No.
You know?
And those small things like the... in the police station, they put all the friends and relatives of the heroes
in
one place with all the evidence from all the cases that have been running. What's it called? The chamber. Evidence chamber?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So it was easy access. Didn't even look like that door was locked.
Yeah.
So, again, it's sloppy plot devices, like just sloppy ways to get from point A to point B.
And it was great to see Foggy again. Foggy was amazing at this.
Foggy was good. He continues to get better and better each time, yeah.
And the grief, I wonder how he deals, because he will deal with the grief of Matt Murdock's death at the end of Defenders in Daredevil Season 3.
Yes.
In some way, shape, or form.
That will be quite interesting. Because, I mean, the last scene, where is Matt Murdock, right? So, more to come. So, I think, you know, I think they did it in a good way to set it up for what comes next.
Yeah.
So, hopefully, now that the hand is gone, they can come up with a much better set of bad guys.
Yeah.
And I was missing Kingpin. Like, I want Kingpin back. He's still, like, the most compelling villain out of that whole piece. I mean, aside from the Purple Man, who's now gone, because he was great as well.
Yeah, but the Purple Man had to go.
Yeah.
The Purple Man had to go.
So hopefully, as they continue, they can build towards something even better for the next Defenders series. So.
And this time, awesome. Hopefully, with Doctor Strange, Valkyrie, Silver Surfer, and the Hulk. Like the original Defenders. Oh, I hope they merge the
extended
universes. I hope they merge the universes at some point.
I want to see Spider-Man in there.
That would be great.
All right, cool. And on that note, I guess we've come to the end of episode, what are we? Episode 7 we are, right?
Oh.
Season 2, episode
7. Episode 7,
Overall, episode 16.
Yes. So,
thanks for staying with us if you've been here this whole time. It's been a blast. And we will be back, I guess, ready with our Christmas special. And
it's already September. Yeah.
And the lead up to Star Wars. More to come.
Cool. So little time, so much to do.
Yeah, so much to watch. All right, thanks everyone.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And we will catch you on the next one. Bye.